ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today, we talk to Grammy-nominated artist We Govern We. John Dodds tells us a thrilling story from across the pond, and we feature Blackstone's exciting new release, Devil's Knot, an audiobook about the West Memphis 3 stories featured on this show. So keep listening. Hello. Thank you for joining us. I'm Cyrus Emerson.
And I'm Lucia Sherman, with a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. Where did Black Friday and Cyber Monday come from? While the term Black Friday has been used for several decades by retailers, the public, and the media to describe the day after Thanksgiving, some new terms are coming into use to describe additional events in the holiday shopping cycle. A relatively recent but less known addition to the marketing vocabulary has been Cyber Monday. Black Friday is the Friday just after Thanksgiving. It is considered an unofficial start of the holiday shopping season, as well as one of the season's busiest days. Cyber Monday, which is the Monday just after Thanksgiving, has been considered in recent years to be the start of the online holiday shopping season. The National Retail Federation says it coined the term in 2005 to describe a sharp rise in online revenue and traffic the first Monday after Thanksgiving. Cyrus, I think I'm going to be shopping locally this Christmas to help support our local businesses. How about you?
Definitely. All the time. Yeah, support local business all the time.
I think it's really important, especially in this economic downturn that we have. You know what I really love about Ashland? I love to go downtown and when it's snowing and even when it's not snowing and when it's seasonal and to shop and to support businesses, say, like Noble Coffee or Bloomsbury Books. And it's great. And speaking of Cyber Monday, they all have a online presence these days. If people want to get on their computer on Monday, why don't they support these local businesses in Southern Oregon?
Definitely. Or, you know, even do a donation to KSKQ.
Oh, that's right. And also, how about Blackstone Audio and get some of those wonderful entertainment or knowledge-filled audiobooks that are so special.
Yeah, that we feature every show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots to choose from.
Yes. I love their library.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I thought Cyber Monday was a drink.
And, you did not.
Yeah, I ordered a bunch and I had a Black Friday.
You don't drink.
That's true. Yeah, but here's somebody who does. On a night when he was honored for his way with words, Keith Richards was clearly winging it. This is one for the books. If you get my drift, you hacks, the 67-year-old Rolling Stones guitarist joked as he accepted the Mailer Prize for Distinguished Biography. He chuckled, he swore, and he reasoned that since he had been writing songs since age 16, his appearance at a literary event was not a total intrusion. It had been an evening of earnest speeches about the importance of writing and education, about the disparity of wealth, and the lasting lessons of the Holocaust. You've heard some incredible people about some serious stuff, Richards acknowledged, before bringing the subject to his own demons, his longtime heroin addiction. The only serious stuff I'm interested in, I've given up, he also added. The Mailer Awards are named for Norman Mailer, who died in 2007, and are sponsored by the Norman Mailer Center and a Norman Mailer Writers Colony. The Life book was read by Johnny Depp.
Oh.
And won audiobook of the year.
Well, aren't they like best friends?
I think so, yeah. Especially for the Pirates of the Caribbean. You hung out with them, right?
Yeah.
The mannerisms.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Man, I'd like to be a fly on that wall when they get together.
Definitely.
Or maybe I just like to be in the room instead of being a fly.
Yeah.
Oh,
gosh.
Or
on the set or something.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that would be really fun.
They're both musicians, too. They should play together. They come out with an album or something.
Yeah. I bet they talk about that. But what do I know? But I know something. I have some interesting information here about Angelina Jolie's directorial debut has finally found itself a name in the land of blood and honey. A love story set in the Bosnian War in the 1990s has officially been picked up for distribution and will hit theaters this December. Distributed by the studio Film District, the movie will be released in the United States on December 23rd. The deal has to be a relief for Jolie, who wrote and directed the film, as the project nearly died 8 months ago when it was at the center of an international public relations controversy. A rumor began spreading that the movie script featured a Bosnian woman who was raped by a Serbian man and then falls in love with him, an idea that understandably upset women's rights groups in the area. When the Association of Women's Victims of War then protested the film, Jolie's filming permit was revoked, and In the Land of Blood and Honey looked like it had died in the water. But after proving that the film does indeed depict the war in an accurate manner, Jolie's team was able to sort the issue out with the Bosnian government and have the permit reinstated. Jolie also had trouble with another aspect of the film, its title. It's a heavy film, she told Entertainment Weekly. You want to find a title that really helps the audience know what they're walking into. In the Land of Blood and Honey does just that. And we saw the trailer.
We did.
Oh.
It looks really good.
It looks wonderful. The cinematography is spectacular. And the acting that I saw is as spectacular, and I think she's going to have a great piece on her hands. I think she probably has it anyway. So
yeah, it just shows the talent that she has to be able to come out with a movie this serious as her debut,
yes.
Directorial debut.
And
yeah, she's not just another pretty face.
I think she wrote it also. Didn't she write it?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. I'm very excited to see that. And, you know, not just another pretty face and another humanitarian. She's an all-around artist.
I'm sure we'll see her at the Oscars.
Oh, I'm sure we will. I hope so.
Yeah, we should have a red carpet show or something.
Well, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, it would be fun.
Why don't you put it together?
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. In your spare time, right?
Yeah, my spare time, yeah. I mean, go down there. We could maybe bring a
down
tape
in LA
or something, yeah, and just hang out on the red carpet. I've seen it down there. You can walk down there to the red carpet or at least, you know, stand outside of
it. Yeah. We could get press passes.
Oh.
What do you think?
That'd be great.
That'd be awesome.
Anyway. Well, here's another serious story about Eastern Europe. An Eastern European pack of cyber thieves, known as the Rove Group, hijacked at least 4 million computers in over 100 countries, including at least 500,000 computers in the U.S., to make off with 14 million in illegitimate income before they were caught. The malware allegedly used in the massive and sophisticated scheme also managed to infect computers in U.S. government agencies, including NASA, and targeted websites for major institutions like iTunes, Netflix, and the IRS. The accused hackers, 6 Estonian nationals and a Russian national, rerouted the internet traffic illegally on the infected computers for the last 4 years in order to reap profits from internet advertisement deals, the indictment said. The FBI busted up the alleged international cyber ring after a two-year investigation called Operation Ghost Click. The global reach of these cyber thieves demonstrates that the criminal world is flat, said the FBI assistant director in charge of the New York field office. The internet is pervasive because it is such a useful tool, but it is a tool that can be exploited by those with bad intentions and a little know-how. The six Estonian nationals have been arrested on cybercrime charges, while the Russian national remains at large. Yeah, well, you know, that story really illustrates how, you know, as technology develops and we have all these great devices and, you know, this great content, the criminal activity develops too, and they find new ways of committing crimes. But, you know, having the internet and all that is a great blessing.
It is a great blessing. And
thank God they got the internet police out there keeping us all safe.
And they do. Operation Ghost Click. I like the name.
Yeah, definitely. It could be like a Mission Impossible movie or something. They got a new one coming out, too.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh. Yeah. Oh, something to look forward to. I have one for you. Operation Ghost Click, starring Cyrus Emerson.
You're so kind. You could write and direct it. Yeah, that would be great. Not only can I outrun a locomotive, but I can jump over my mouse in a single bound.
Okay, Superman.
Are you going to write and direct it?
I'd love to direct it. That's something near and dear to my heart. I'll tell you about it sometime. I think you already know, though.
Yeah, the Houdini movie.
Yeah.
You write the script and the cape's coming out.
Okay,
that's for sure.
I'll cast you. I have not last but not least, a story about one of my favorite actors, Morgan Freeman. He's taking home a new prize, a Lifetime Achievement Honor at the Golden Globes. The Hollywood Foreign Press Association announced that Freeman will receive the group Cecil B. DeMille Award at the 69th Annual Golden Globe Ceremony on January 15th. The 74-year-old Freeman is a 5-time Oscar nominee who won the Supporting Actor Prize for 2004's Million Dollar Baby. Freeman's Oscar nominations include Best Actor for 1989's Driving Miss Daisy. Do you remember that?
I do remember
that
movie.
It was a great film. It was. For which he won a Golden Globe. Freeman made his big screen debut as an extra in 1965's The Pawnbroker, and his film work remained modest over the next two decades, which really surprises me.
Yeah, he's so distinguished, you know, when you see him on film.
I know. You would think that he would have. Anyway, his big successes early on came in theater, which brought him a Tony Award nomination in 1978's The Mighty Gents, and television, where he was a regular for 6 years on the children's show The Electric Company. Freeman's big screen career took off with the 1987 drama Street Smart, which earned him his first Oscar nomination. And among his credits since then are Glory, Unforgiven, The Shawshank Redemption, Bruce Almighty, this year's family hit Dolphin Tale, and the current Batman franchise, including next summer's The Dark Knight Rises. The DeMille Award winners are chosen by the board of directors for the Hollywood Foreign Press, which includes about 90 reporters who cover Hollywood for overseas outlets. The award went to Robert De Niro a year ago. Other past winners include Steven Spielberg, Barbara Streisand, Shirley MacLaine, Jack Nicholson, and Clint Eastwood, who directed Freeman and Million Dollar Baby. Hollywood's second biggest movie awards after the Oscars, the Golden Globes, will air live on NBC. You know, I really enjoyed the film Shawshank Redemption. It's one of my top 10 films of all time, and I watch it often. And every time I watch it, I get more and more insight and nuance into the performances and to the script. And one thing I didn't know and surprised me was that Stephen King wrote the screenplay.
Yeah, it was I believe it was a short story.
Yeah, and they just elongated it. Oh man, I love that film. I love his performance. He's great.
You know, another movie that I liked that wasn't mentioned on that list was the Nelson Mandela movie.
Oh, that was a
great Mandela
film. Yeah.
So I guess he was a bit of a pacifist. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so I guess this next story, which is a local story, but could have national ramifications.
Really?
Yeah. Might be something that Mandela would be interested in. Oregon universities will not appeal a court ruling that allows guns on college campuses because they say it would not be successful. In Oregon, it is legal to carry a concealed weapon into a public building if the holder has a permit. The university system wants to put bans in place for all classrooms, university buildings, and residence halls. An Oregon Court of Appeals ruling in September says the university system does not have the authority to ban guns on campus. Yeah, this is amazing, especially after the Columbine shooting and the Virginia Tech shooting, that here in Oregon, they would still allow students to carry guns on the campus.
It surprises me.
It does. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but how about those ducks, though?
Okay, let's talk about the U of O ducks. I tell you, Southern Oregon is crazy about the ducks. They're
definitely
a great team.
Yeah.
Okay, this sounds really girly, but and I love my football, but I love their uniforms. They're always changing their uniforms. Is it Nike that supports them? And so it's always fun to see what their new look is every week, or almost every week.
Definitely. Yeah. And then
it's cool.
And with Thanksgiving coming up, we've got some great games to watch next week. Detroit and Green Bay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. My 49ers.
49ers fan here.
Big 49ers fan.
Yeah, they got
Mr. Alex Smith is showing everybody that he's pretty good with that football.
Definitely.
Proud of him.
Yeah. Kind of like Tim Tebow or something.
Yeah. Broncos. Yeah, I think Charlie's a Broncos fan, isn't he?
Yes, he is. And they've been in the gutter for a while now, so he's pretty ecstatic with their resurgence here. Yeah, Charlie's got some great interviews coming up on this show, too.
Yeah, he does.
Which we'll be getting to. And Carson Bench from KSKQ is going to be here in the studio next week, I believe.
And I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a really exciting interview.
He's a great guy.
Yeah. So it'll be a lot of fun to have him on the show,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, well, yeah.
That's a look at your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Blackstone special feature.
Just sing my fears on the radio. All that banter on the news. All that screaming on the streets. The believers in their pews.
Charlie Stanton, the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., talked to Ashland's favorite Greek band, We Govern We, from their American hometown of Ventura, California.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today we have on Anna Kolokalu from the band We Govern We from Ventura, California. Welcome, Anna.
Hi, thank you.
How's it going out there in sunny Southern California?
Oh, it's not that sunny, actually, to tell you the truth. It's super hot, but in Ventura, it kind of has this permanent cloud over it. It's like the Charlie Brown of cities, I think.
That's funny. Well, we hear about Ventura, of course, in the music. And, for everybody out there listening, We Govern We has an album out that's just really, really off the charts, and we wanted to talk to Anna a little bit about it. She is the singer, and maybe you can tell us a little bit about it, Anna.
Yeah, sure. Well, we started writing this album. Well, my husband now and I were in a band for about 4 years in Athens, Greece. And we were just friends. And then we discovered that, we could write music together. Anything he'd play, I knew the words to. And if I wrote any words, he'd sit down at the piano and he just played something to it. And as soon as we found that out, I think within 24 hours, we had 5 songs that, haven't changed to this day, 4 years later.
Wow.
And yeah, and soon thereafter, within a year, we moved to California and got a new bass player and a drummer. We had put the band together in Greece, and we were playing. Our first show was on TV there because we already had a little bit of notoriety from the previous band. And everything was really going great there, but we had to move here and put it all together here. And we kind of worked on that album for like three and a half years. So it's just so amazing to finally have it finished.
Well, the album sounds great. We've listened to it quite a bit here, and there's a great video for the Anna Lee song.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah,
great. Yeah, yeah. I mean, actually, some of your videos are really kind of I don't guess wild would be the right word, but
wild.
Yeah. I mean, the Anna Lee, I was wondering, who's the little girl in there, and is that supposed to be representative of you or?
No, it's supposed to be Annabelle Lee from the Edgar Allan Poe poem.
Oh, okay.
We live in a community of artists here in Ventura, like an artist building, and she is one of my neighbors, that little girl, Emily. She is adorable.
She's
really cool kid. But I guess the director kind of had different ideas of, if she was dead or alive, if it was me or if it was Annabelle or what it was just kind of left up to what the viewer would come up with after they saw it.
Well, the director, hats off to him because, I've watched it several times and, I just formed my own opinion on it.
Yeah, I think that's the whole point. I think that's the whole point with art in general, which is what I'd like to kind of categorize the music as too. It's just kind of an art. A piece of art that you can listen to or watch the video of and kind of come up with your own story that goes along with it. Make it personal to yourself.
Yeah. And you guys accomplished that. It's really a great video and a wonderful song. Very, very catchy, by the way.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, you can thank Edgar Allan Poe for the lyrics, but Pano is my husband. He writes all the music and he's pretty talented when it comes to putting something catchy together.
Yeah, quite a, you hear it and it's very infectious, So,
cool.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked it. And, you guys have I've listened to your album, quite a bit, and you have like a good mix of, mm-hmm. Some of it's, real catchy, some of it's, real, like a more of a slow, like a ballad that builds up a crescendo, which is, what I really like. And,
pretty?
Yeah, really, really nice.
Thanks.
Then, another video I saw all this, by the way, folks, on the Grammy site. So, mm-hmm. You guys are getting quite the airplay there. The other one was Bully, and I really liked the way you did that. So maybe you could tell us about it, I've seen it, but for everybody out there listening, where did you guys come up with the concept? Because for everyone out there, the song is there's several actors in it.
Well, that song is kind of about how we let people bully us as we grow up, and then it kind of affects us. And I think that also when you are cruel or mean to someone, it's kind of actually somebody else being cruel or mean to someone through you. In other words, all the bullying that you let yourself hold on to, you pass it on. And that's also how I look at it when people are grumpy or rude to me. I'm just thinking, well, they're just passing on somebody else's grumpiness. And it's just kind of supposed to be the idea of, if you let yourself understand that, then it's very empowering to just let it roll off of your skin and not let yourself be bullied or, get upset about the way people act to you. And the concept for the music video was, well, all those people came over to my house for my birthday party. Uh-huh. And my friend who's the director took each one of them into a bedroom and filmed them each singing one word or one line from the song. And in the beginning, they're kind of angry, and as the chorus builds up, they just, you know, kind of let go of any anger or any pain, and they become happy and joyous, I think, by the end. I think that's pretty much as simple as I can put it. It's a pretty simple concept.
Well, you know, it's a great video, and you know, I highly recommend people take a look at it. You can see We Govern We, some of their videos on our site, justimagineinc.com, so everyone can take a look there. And where else can people see some of your videos and your songs?
Well, we have a YouTube channel. We also have WeGovernWe.com. We're on Facebook. If you type in We Govern We, you can find us anywhere on the internet, whether it's at Amazon or iTunes or whatever.
All over the cyber world there?
Excuse me?
All over the cyber world?
All over the cyber world, yes. We're all over the cyber universe.
There you go. I like that terminology better. So where'd you come up with the name, We Govern We? That's pretty different.
It's kind of silly, but
okay.
I woke up in the middle of the night one night and I had seen... I was watching TV in my dream, and they were saying, like, and the new album by We Govern We is out today. And I woke up, and I'm like, that's my album. It's out. and I went over to Pana's house, and I wrote it down on a napkin, and I just passed it over to him without saying anything. And he's like, that's our name. And it just kind of came from that, because the band that we were in before, it was a lovely band. I love everybody in that band. We had a lot of fun. But there was a lot of feeling of that I can't do what I want to do. I felt a little bit, not oppressed, but I just felt like it wasn't my project. And I was just really big on anybody who's working with us or whatever we're doing, that it should just, you know, you should be the master of your own heart, the master of your own destiny. So it's not political at all. I think people think because we come from Greece that automatically it's going to mean, oh, it's about government because they're Greek and they, you know, invented government or whatever, whatever.
Well, didn't you?
It has nothing to do with... I did, personally, yeah. No, I'm kidding. It's just about governing yourself and allowing yourself to be the master of your own destiny.
Okay, well, you know, that's a little different out there. Just like the title is a little different. I like it. We govern we, and you know, since you guys come from the cradle of civilization, Greece. Maybe you want to tell us a little bit how you came from Greece to the USA.
Well, my brother lives in Ventura, and he was always telling me, you know, I should come out to California for the music scene. I was working in television in Greece, and all was fine and well, but all these projects kept on falling through. You know, the economy there was kind of spiraling downwards.
We've heard.
For a long time before it came to the news, to anyone's attention here. And I was very, you know, I was constantly, I don't know, either out of work or, you know, a project was ending, and it was not very financially viable anymore. And my brother was just like, well, just take Pano and bring him over here, because this is where you want to be if you want to get your music out to the world. And it's true, in Greece there's kind of a glass ceiling for anyone who's singing in English. And so we figured, you know, well, let's give it a try. And we ended up here in Ventura, where my brother was. Might not be the best place.
Ventura's beautiful. It's
an adorable town, but it's not exactly, you know, Hollywood or somewhere where, or Nashville or somewhere where, you know, music can really take off. But they've been very, very supportive of us here, and we play almost every week here, and they voted us, you know, many times in Bales of the Bands, and we won the first year that we were here, and this year they voted us second favorite in Ventura, which means, you know, first worst, but no, I'm just joking.
Yeah. Well, we have voted you our favorite song. Greek band in Ashland, Oregon. Just by the way, if you wanted to put that on your website.
Our favorite Greek band. That's cute. I will put it on my website.
Voted the favorite Greek band in Ashland, Oregon.
For 500 points, I'd like to say we got right.
Yeah, but...
Well, thanks. I appreciate that a lot.
Well, you know, we gathered everybody together, and I called all my friends, both of them, and... and the ballots are in, and you are the winner.
Yay!
There you go.
I landslide with two people.
Well, you know, it was touch and go for a while, but yeah, last minute balloting, yeah, pulled you through.
Arguing with all those other Greek fans.
There you go.
It was just Yanni.
So, who are your guys' your influences music wise?
Well, the thing that I find interesting is that Pano grew up on an island with very, very few influences. It was a very small island, and, like, you know, he didn't know who Frank Sinatra was. And so I think that he has a very kind of original take on music. And uh-huh. when he started hearing things like British rock, Arcade Fire, and stuff like that, he was just kind of, you know, completely wild, and it really inspired him. I love British rock as well, and since I was little, I always was in love with Cyndi Lauper. I moved around a lot as a child. We moved from Naperville, Illinois, to Greece, and then from Greece back to Illinois, and then from there I moved back to Greece, and then I moved to England, and then I moved to Cyprus. But the one friend I always had was Cyndi Lauper.
Cyndi Lauper.
And so for me, Cyndi Lauper, she's just the be-all and end-all for me personally.
She has a really nice voice.
She's amazing. Pano took me to see her last year, and I didn't realize what a huge influence she was on me. But seeing her live, I cried throughout the whole show, and I was I couldn't believe that I was so so taken by it, or I just kind of shook me back to being in third grade and alone in Greece, having just moved there, and just, you know, running around my room listening to She Bop, jumping on my bed, imagining that I was on Putting on the Hit.
Oh, wow.
With, yeah, my extended Cyndi Lauper repertoire.
Do you do any covers of Cyndi Lauper?
No, I don't. We're working on a cover of She's in Parties by Bauhaus. Because our producer is Daniel Ash, and they're putting together a Bauhaus compilation CD, covers by a lot of art, like I think 18 artists or something uh-huh. like that. And so we get to do that one. So that'll be another cover that we have under our belt.
Well, I look forward to hearing that. All right. Well, everybody out there, be sure to, go on your internet, which was invented in Greece, by the way, as we all know, and check out We Govern We. They have some fantastic videos, and you can get their albums on Amazon and also on iTunes or anywhere where fine music is sold. And you can also see them on Just Imagine It, Inc., and we will put up some videos and put their CDs on there. And it's been great talking with you, Anna.
It's been really great talking with you, too. Thanks for calling.
Oh, not a problem. And you know, knock them dead at the Roxy.
Oh, thank you. Hopefully we can come out there and see you guys next summer.
That would be fantastic. Come out here and play Ashland.
You got it.
All right. Thanks so much, Anna.
To learn more about We Govern We, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com. Thank you.
John Dodd's gruesome tales continue with his new book, Bone Machines. He spoke with a haunting echo via Skype from Scotland with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
All right, everyone. Welcome to another exciting episode of Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today we're talking with author John Dodds. John's calling from Scotland, and he hails from Bulgaria, where he has written several books. Bone Machines is a great book that's been featured on Just Imagine It, Inc., and it's on John's blog spot as well. A question I want to ask you about Bone Machines, which is a great book. It's a thriller. It's also available on podiocast.com. And in the book, you start off the line with the line, "They suffer for his art," and I just love that line. And, I've often thought that that could have been the title of the book.
Could have been. Yeah, I think it was my original publisher who came up with that tagline for the book, and I liked it. I thought it was I thought it was pretty cool. Really, probably not something I could have come up with myself. But the opening sentence of the book was probably the first thing that came into my head, even before I knew where the book was going to go. Which was, I'm not quoting it word for word, but it's something like, "The boy had the poor taste to die before I could kill him." For me, that kind of summed up the character and what was going on with them in one sentence, really. So anyway, it took rather a long time to write. It was written over a four-year period, and it's my first completed novel. I mean, I've made several abortive attempts to write novels in the past. That was the first one I actually managed to get to the end with. But equally, when someone says, "Oh, it took me 10 years to write a book or 5 years to write that book," I kind of don't believe folks when they say that. I mean, essentially, I'm more inclined to say it's over a 4 year period, which probably means I'm terrifically lazy.
And, and
so, you're writing in bits and pieces over that time. So I guess when someone says this book took me 10 years to write, they probably mean in real terms 6 months. But when you're snatching time in between your day job and family and friends and partying and so on, that's probably it, about 6 months, really.
Yeah, I hear that a lot from authors. A lot of authors will tell me they started a project. And, for example, I had this one guy that I was speaking with, and he wrote this book, and I asked him where he got the idea for it, and he told me, he goes, "I had this idea 20 years ago, and I wrote about, 100 pages, and then 20 years later, I finished it."
Yeah. Each book has its moment in time. But, I'm faced with an interesting proposition at the moment. You touched on the ideas of, the idea of someone saying, "I had an idea for a book," when people say that, I think, well, go ahead and write it. For me, coming up with the idea is the easy part. Writing it is the hard part. There's a woman who's hoping to represent me to kind of some mainstream publishers. Basically, what she said to me, "Well, you've written your second Tom Kendrick, that's my detective novel, mm-hmm. and it's called Callie's Kiss," which I think you've read, Edward, although it's not...
I have, it's great.
Thank you. It's not out there yet. Kali, of course, being the Indian goddess of death, but also death and destruction, but also of change, and so on. She said to me, "Well, you've got these two Kendrick books, but the publisher are going to want to know what your next two are about." So I spent about 20 minutes thinking about it, and I came up with two plot ideas, in about 20 minutes. But the problem is going to be writing those plot ideas. I could probably come up with 10 plot ideas in an hour, but or 10, basic taglines for 10 different stories, but that's not the story, that's just a starting point. But it's fun to do that. It's fun to play about with that stuff.
Well, that's a lot of pressure for an author. You've got Bone Machines, you've got Kaylee's Kiss. So what are your next two projects? Well, my next project is going to be Bone Machines 2, and then followed by Kaylee's Kiss 2. You're looking for Kaylee's Kiss 3, won't you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. I mean, although Callie's Kiss also features Tom Kendrick, the two books are essentially incredibly different, as I'm sure you appreciated. One of them has more, I suppose, gory, gruesome elements, although Callie's Kiss also has some gruesome elements. But Callie's Kiss has a more political thrust to it, in terms of what inspired it and so on, which is witchcraft murders in India, which are still happening to this day. And basically I transposed that idea to the city of Glasgow in Scotland, and looking at the immigrant community and exploitation of illegal immigrants by drug dealers and so on. So it's kind of fundamentally a very different book. But interestingly enough, that one, although somewhat longer than Bone Machines is about 92,000-93,000 words, I wrote it over a 4-year period, and Callie's Kiss is 125,000 words, and I wrote that in about a year. But then again, by this time I'd moved to Bulgaria, and I no longer have a day job, so I had more time to write, so that might account for that.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing about, again, getting back to Bone Machines, is, you know, like the opening line, you know, when you say, you know, he had the nerve, you know, to die after he went through all the preparation, you know.
Yeah.
To kill him. I mean, how cool is that? You know, I mean, listen, you know, that is just like, you know, when you read the opening line and you're like, I got to find out what's going on with this, you know.
Well, a lot of people said the opening part of the book is, they find it very dark and quite, someone who commented on my blog or on iTunes or something thought it was going to be a slasher book, and they said, oh, wait a minute. By the time I got into chapter two, I realised it wasn't a slasher book, it was something else. So both in terms of the opening sentence and then where I went with the book after that, I quite enjoy messing with people's heads, you know, and messing with people's expectations as well. And I hope they'll stay with me through that process.
Well, I know that I certainly have, and I'm sure, you know, anybody who reads your work, you know, is like an instant fan.
Oh, thank you. Well, I've had some fantastic reader comments, and it's always humbling when someone who's read your stuff takes the time to actually write to you. And I'm looking at like 5-star ratings on iTunes for the podcast. So I, when I saw that coming up, I was thinking, you know, that's incredible, really.
Yeah, you know what? Well, when I read your work, you know, it's about a year ago, I immediately said, I've got to get a hold of this guy, you know, because this stuff is great, you know, and if you're having that, you know, kind of impact on, you know, people around the globe, you know, it's not going to be too long before we're going to see a Bone Machines movie or maybe a Callie's Kiss movie.
I certainly hope so. I mean, where I'm at the moment, Edward, is I think I've communicated with you. Just Imagine It, Inc., you've put the ebook version out there under your own imprint, solely as an ebook, and right now it's free, and it would be nice if we can start to charge for it at some stage, but basically, you know, I'd like as many people as possible to read it and kind of connect with what I'm doing and what you're doing. I guess my main struggle at the moment is trying to get an agent. You know, I've been approaching that from different angles.
It would really help with sales of the book as well.
Oh, well, absolutely. I feel inspired just talking to you about it. I never know what works. It's the old idea that, you know, the people who do the stuff aren't always the best people at promoting the stuff.
You know, at the end of the day, it's really, you know, is it a good story? Because, you know, I recently, you know, reread, and I hadn't read this in about, you know, probably 30 years, Treasure Island. I read it on, I was waiting, for a train, and I was, you know, reading on my iPhone. Mm-hmm. And so, and it's just like, you know, this book was written, you know, like roughly, you know, 200, 250 years ago. And, you know, it doesn't matter because the story is just that good. It's the same thing about, you know, your books, you know, because you're going for the story, because the story draws you in, and, you know, we all want to be entertained, we all want to be taken to another world, we all want to be able to do things, you know, through your imagination that, you know, that we didn't think of, you know, which probably, you know, where steampunk gets us a big following.
Yeah.
But I would suggest that you put your patio book version of Bone Machines out in India.
Yes.
Because that is a huge audience, my friend, and they speak English.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I did toy with the idea of trying to pitch Kali's Kiss at an Indian publisher, but certainly a first pitch at trying to get Bone Machines out to an Indian audience would be amazing. Certainly, in terms of I can look at where the book's being picked up through the software that Podio Books uses to load up the podcast, and certainly there's places as far flung as Mauritius, France, Germany, it's really all over the world. I can't say that I've seen India come up though, so that's an interesting little challenge. China has, and I think Japan has as well. So it's interesting. The other thing I wanted to say to you, Edward, the fact I will now go off Please This Punch, because you mentioned Bone Machines in almost the same breath as Treasure Island, so I'm a happy boy.
Well, they're both great books, my friend. Both great books. And I've read them both, so, there's a learned opinion.
Well, similarly across... Sorry, Edward, I was just going to say, similarly from across the pond in the other direction, one of my favourite writers from back then is Jack London. Call of the Wild is an amazing book. And I read one of his less well-known books called Martin Eden as well, which is about a kind of semi-kind of wild man in polite society in the States. And I loved it for its characterization and the kind of psychological drama that was going on. But for sheer sort of entertainment and drama, the Jack London books and one of his early short stories, I think it's called To Light a Fire, that I read when I was at high school. Well, high school you'd call it, secondary school we call it. I absolutely loved it, and I just found it quite, hypnotic.
Yeah, and books will do that for you, and that's why we all love them so much, and they stand the test of time. The other reason I brought up India is because we are, unbeknownst to me when I did the tracking, on our podcast, Get Behind Me, Not Stay There, we're starting to get a huge following in India. And I was trying to figure out why, and then all of a sudden it hit me. Well, because they speak English.
Absolutely.
They can understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, India is an incredibly intensely literary place. And of course the English language is highly regarded. It's a product of kind of British cultural imperialism. That's quite hard to say. I haven't even touched that bottle of whiskey that's sitting on my desk at the moment, but it's sitting there looking at me slyly. So
say, come on, John, you're going to do it anyway.
yeah. Well, it was a lovely gift from my stepdaughter and her new husband, who were married this past weekend, and it was really thoughtful. We just had their wedding was absolutely amazing, a real fairy tale wedding. So it's been, as I say, I couldn't speak to you this past weekend because there was a lot of partying going on.
There you go. Well, that's it. If you're going to have a party, that's a very, very good reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
John, it's been great talking with you, and we look forward to your new projects. And you can always find John's work on Just Imagine It, Inc., and, of course, you can find him on WordPress.
Yeah.
And patiobooks.com for Bone Machines, which I highly recommend.
Thank you again for all your support, Edward.
To learn more about John Dodds, visit us at justimagineitinc.com.
It's New Year's Eve. It's been a year since I last saw you. I can't recall how many tears that I have gone through since that day. Oh, la-di-da, hip, hip, hooray.
For weeks in 1993, after the murders of 3 8-year-old boys, police in West Memphis, Arkansas seemed stymied. Then suddenly, detectives charged 3 teenagers, alleged members of a satanic cult, with the killings. Despite stunning investigative blunders, a confession riddled with errors, and an absence of physical evidence linking any of the accused to the crime, the teenagers were tried and convicted. Jurors sentenced Jason Baldwin and Jesse Miskelly to life in prison. They sentenced Damian Eccles, the accused ringleader, to death. Recently, on Get Behind Me Now, Stay There, we featured a story about their release from prison. Now, available from Blackstone Audio, Inc., Devil's Knot by award-winning journalist Mara Leverett, chronicling the saga.
At 7:41 p.m. on May 5, 1993, a full moon rose behind the Memphis skyline. Its light glinted across the Mississippi River and fell onto the mid-sized Arkansas town, aspiringly named West Memphis. Sometime between the rising of that moon and its setting the next morning, something diabolical would happen in West Memphis. 3 8-year-old boys would vanish, plucked off the streets of their neighborhood by an unseen, murderous hand. Under the glare of the next day's sun, police would discover 3 young bodies. The police would stumble for weeks without clues, until the moon itself became one. John Mark Byers, an unemployed jeweler, was the first parent to report a child missing. At 8 p.m., with the full moon on the rise, Byers telephoned the West Memphis police. 10 minutes later, a patrol officer responded. She drove her cruiser down East Barton Street in a working-class neighborhood. At the corner where Barton intersected 14th Street, the officer stopped in front of the Byers' 3-bedroom house. Byers, an imposing man, 6 feet 5 inches tall, weighing more than 200 pounds, with long hair tied back in a ponytail, met her at the door. Behind him stood his wife Melissa, 5 feet 6, somewhat heavyset, with long hair and hollow eyes. Mark Byers did most of the talking. The officer listened and took notes. The last time the victim was seen, he was cleaning the yard at 5:30 p.m. That would have been 1 hour and 20 minutes before sunset. The Byerses described Christopher as 4 feet 4 inches tall, weighing 50 pounds, with hair and eyes that were both light brown. He was 8 years old. The officer left the Byerses house and within minutes was dispatched to another call at a chicken restaurant about 1 mile away. She pulled up at the Bojangles drive-thru at 8:42 p.m. Through the window, the manager reported that a bleeding black man had entered the restaurant about 1/2 hour before and gone into the women's restroom. The manager told the officer that the man, who had blood on his face and had seemed mentally disoriented, had wandered away from the premises just a few minutes before she arrived. When employees entered the restroom after he left, they found blood smeared on the walls. The officer took the report but investigated the incident no further. At 9:01, without ever having entered the restaurant, she drove away to a criminal mischief complaint about someone throwing eggs at a house. At 9:24 p.m., the same officer responded to another call, again from Barton Street, this one from the house directly across from the Byerses. Here, a woman, Dana Moore, reported that her 8-year-old son Michael was also missing. Taking out her pad again, the officer wrote, "Complainant stated she observed the victim, her son, riding bicycles with his friends Stevie Branch and Christopher Byers. When she lost sight of the boys, she sent her daughter to find them. The boys could not be found."
Mara Leverett has won several awards for investigative journalism, including Arkansas's Booker Worthen Prize for her book, The Boys on the Tracks. A contributing editor to the Arkansas Times, she lives in Little Rock. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to blackstoneaudio.com.
You ready, Mace?
Party people, in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time
for us to...
Yeah.
Yeah, what you know about going out? Head west, red legs, TVs, all up in the headrest. Try and live it up, rock jewel, bigger truck, peace all glittered up, stick a kid.
Get behind me, now stay there.
East, west, every state, come on, bury the hate. Minions, the only thing we in the heavy to make. Whether from the ex-friend, intellects or bins, let's begin, bring this BS to an end.
Come on.
Is a Just Imagine Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineinc.com. I'm Cyrus Emerson, and have a great Thanksgiving.
And I'm Lucia Sherman. Please join us next time for a dialogue about the new book on Jesse Applegate, one of the earliest pioneers to live in Southern Oregon, because that's where we are. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
You make me feel so good.
Bad boy.
You know you make me feel so good.
Yeah.
You know you make me feel so good.
That's what we do.